WVOX and WVIP HD2. New Rochelle.
1460 WVOX.
Welcome to Brand Talk, the only show on radio where branding gets personal, here on WVOX Radio 1460 on your AM dial. My name is Dr. John Tantillo, and we're here to talk about brands, your personal brand, your career brand, and even your business brand, sponsored exclusively today by the Whitmore Group, where a relationship is a partnership. Folks, for those of you joining us for the first time, this show is about transitions and how the science and psychology of branding can help change your relationships for the better, your career or business for the better, your life for the better, so that you can become the brand you are truly meant to be. This is a call-in show, and it's your show where we want to hear from you. So if you're going through a transition, are you concerned about your brand, your business brand, give us a call at 914-636-0110. Let's talk your brand through. That's 914-636-0110. Or if email is the game, give us a email at doc@brandtalkradio.com. Or the phone, once again, 914-636-0110. And what I want to talk to you about today is medical marketing. Yes, medical marketing. A few years ago, I was talking to one of my physician friends about marketing and how he was marketing his practice. And he said to me, John, I do not wish to say anything critical about your marketing professional, your profession, I should say, but I'm an ophthalmologist and I'm a medical doctor, and I don't, and my profession of medicine don't engage in that kind of activity. Fast forward to a dinner I had at one of those great restaurants with some friends of mine and another physician friend who, strange as it may seem, he was an ophthalmologist. And we were talking about the possibility of me addressing, are you getting, get a load of this, a group of ophthalmologists at an international conference, because he felt that the general public did not know the difference between an ophthalmologist, optometrists, and those people that are technicians that give you an eye exam when you go for glasses. And what he wanted to do is help spread the word to his colleagues so that they, as well as for us to come up from, actually for me to come up with some sort of a strategy on how best to differentiate these three different terms or brands. And all I could say is, wow, I just couldn't believe how full circle the medical profession had become concerning marketing and branding. And I don't know if you've seen those great ads from New York Presbyterian Hospital, those testimonials where the patients give their personal accounts on just how the New York Presbyterian Hospital helped them deal with their respective health issue in their own words. Folks, this is marketing and branding at its best. And if there's anything that I can do here is to explain and to demonstrate and to give you an appreciation of what this marketing is about, which is namely, it's not about the brand as much as it's about the brand and what sort of need that it is going to satisfy for the respective target market or these customers. And what I love about these ads is it's you didn't have some cute ad copy or copywriter telling these folks what in fact to say. These were in their own words. And, you know, there's a rule in marketing. There's nothing like a testimonial. And I don't know how many hours they had to put these poor patients through before they got those takes, but they, or how many they had to interview before they got those people. But I'm telling you, they, I believe, are very, very, very effective. And it reinforced my decision to go to New York Presbyterian Hospital if I ever had to go through any sort of a procedure. And so from my perspective, advertising and marketing is all about communicating benefits. And, you know, I often get criticized because I look at the traditional part of branding and marketing, and, you know, the flavor of the year or the fashion. It's fashionable to talk about social media. And please, you're talking to a guy who's on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. As a matter of fact, I got a speaking engagement based on LinkedIn. So I am not even criticizing social media, but I think social media is more like going to a cocktail party, or it's pre-advertising. All right, so that what you might be able to do with social media is to, as I was on one of these panels, and everyone wants to talk about the new term is to start a conversation. But after you start the conversation, what you still want to be able to do is, after you start the conversation, they're going to want to know who this guy Tantillo or ABC Trucking or Dolly's Chocolates, how good they are, and they're going to go on the internet, and they're going to want to, and they're going to Google you, and they're going to find out just who this brand is that they've been engaging in. So the point I'm making, I hope I'm not rambling as much as what I'm trying to say here, is for you to be effective of marketing yourself personally or marketing your business, you need a number of arrows in your quiver, some of which are those traditional advertising, marketing, and public relations tactics, as well as those wonderful, much approved, much wanted, and much recommended social media, so that you can, in fact, show everyone just, in fact, who you are. And why I mention this is that a lot of the new marketing folks forget about, and this is why I went on this rant, about the, it's so important in your ads or in your message, they like to talk about messages today, to talk about benefits. What is this product or what is this brand going to do for me? And there is an ad, and I get this in the morning when I'm turning the dial, and I won't mention the station because I work there, and from time to time, or the channel, and I don't want to get any of the advertisers angry at me, but the essence of the ad is that, oh, we're ABC, and because we're ABC, everyone, we're a name in the business, and therefore everyone should use us. This is nonsense. No one should use you unless you can do something for them. That's what marketing and branding is all about, as we used to say in politics. It's not what have you done for me, it's what have you done for me lately. And if there's anything that we can learn about branding and marketing, it's about constantly benefiting our clients with real-life examples and real-life features that are going to, in fact, want us to come back. So anyway, I'd love to hear whether or not you agree with me at 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. You're listening to Brand Talk on WVOX 1460 on your AM dial. And my name is Dr. John Tantillo. And maybe you can see me as your brand coach. I like to get some of you to use me or utilize my expertise in the personal arena as well. So we don't only want to talk about business brands, we want to talk about your personal brand as well. And maybe it can relate to your career, where you might not be getting the due recognition in the marketplace. It could be a relationship where your kids might not be giving you no respect. Okay, it could be a relationship where your partner is not appreciating your brand. So look at me as your brand coach. You know, I do have a degree in psychology, but I'm not an amateur psychologist. I'm a brand coach, so let me get that straight. But if you'd like to, give me a call. I'm at 914-636-0110 or doc@brandtalkradio.com. So, last week I was at a panelist and at this digital content monetization conference, and I addressed the difference between guerrilla and viral marketing, and that's a pretty hot topic as well. And what I'm going to do is talk about that after we have a word from our sponsor, the Whitmore Group.
Folks, insurance is something that we usually don't like to talk about. But at the Whitmore Group, they know how. Whether it's for your business or your home, the Whitmore Group is the place to go. That's where I go for my insurance needs, and I never doubt that they're looking out for me. Simply put, with James Metzger at the helm and his excellent team, your insurance needs are always taken care of. Whether it's commercial property and casualty, personal or health insurance, estate planning, or financial services, the Whitmore Group is where a relationship is a partnership. 516-746-4141 is the number to call, 516-746-4141, or on the web at whitmoregroup.com. And tell them Dr. Tantillo sent you.
We're back. You're listening to Dr. John Tantillo, and this is Brand Talk, and you're listening to WVOX Radio 1460 AM radio. So as I was saying, strange as it may seem, I'm on LinkedIn, and I received this email from the organizer of the Digital Content Monetization Conference, and she had asked me, her name was Frances, and she was the organizer, whether or not I could be on this panel and talk about the difference between guerrilla versus, actually, she wanted me to talk about viral marketing. And, of course, viral marketing is very hot today, and everyone's talking about it. And, of course, I said, well, you know, there's a difference, because I've written some winner and loser posts on viral marketing and how some corporations have used it and got burnt by viral marketing. And guerrilla marketing is something we all want to do. And the distinction, I was getting a little excited. I always stutter a little bit when I get excited about explaining something. And guerrilla marketing is anything out of the box, so anything unconventional. And I've done a lot of those. I've done a lot of guerrilla techniques. It's when everybody says, don't do it, don't do it, we shouldn't do it, why should we do it? And when you do it, I'm glad we did it. That's kind of guerrilla marketing. And viral marketing is something where what you do is you, and the, I shouldn't even say you do it. It could even be done by a third party. It could be done by your competition. It's when something is placed on the internet, and all of a sudden, hundreds of thousands, or it could even be hundreds of people see this great tactic, you think, and it could be good and it can be bad. But and the problem with viral, as the term implies, virus, is that it can spread quickly and indiscriminately, so that you really don't have control over what is in fact going on. And anyway, I started to talk about that, and for me, it's a great tactic if you're a new brand. So if you're starting a car wash, or you're starting a new diner, if you're doing and it's a new brand, I think it's really a fantastic way of getting your name out there. But just be aware that you are not going to be in control once it goes viral. However, if you're in an established industry, so if you're in banking, in financial services, I don't think Chase Bank would want, or Citibank, or these days even Bank of America, things going viral. It wouldn't be really a good thing. Or package goods companies like cereals targeted to children. These are not good. You're taking a risk. And, I just think that before you do anything like that, you should think twice. But I'm sure you folks have your ideas about that. And if you do, why don't you give us a call here on WVOX 1460 on your dial. This is Brand Talk with Dr. John Tantillo at 914-636-0110. Or give us an email at doc@brandtalkradio.com. And now we're ready for our winner and loser of the week. And folks, each week I choose two brands of the week that I believe have either exceeded, or should I say succeeded, or failed in basic brand fundamentals, so that you can implement the takeaways into your own brand life. And without any further ado, let's talk about Dr. Pepper 10. And I had mentioned to you that I was going to, or I had been, I should say, on Fox News Live talking about Dr. Pepper 10 and what I thought about it as a brand, because what they, by the way, they're the winner. And you say, why? Well, it seems that the Dr. Pepper Snapple Group identified their target market for Dr. Pepper 10 as men only. And there's been a predictable outcry because of the perceived bias against women. But bottom line, in everything from the packaging, from the gunmetal gray and the silver bullets to its ad campaign, Dr. Pepper is both creating a lot of free publicity by being controversial while cementing its brand. Here's a sample of the targeted advertising. In a spot, a man is trying to pour Dr. Pepper 10 while riding an ATV. "Hey, ladies," he says. "Hey, ladies, enjoying the film? Of course not. Because this is our movie and our soda. You can't keep the romantic comedies and lady drinks. We're good." Well, Dr. Pepper is also smart about addressing a real need in this still lucrative market. The soft drink industry is a $74 billion per year, but sales have been declining, and health consciousness is part of the reason. Diet soda options are growing, but the problem is that taste is an issue for many consumers, especially men. Dr. Pepper 10 got its name because it only has 10 calories, some of which come from 2 grams of sugar. This this addition of sugar to the diet drink supposedly addresses some of the taste issues while also overcoming some of the perception obstacles that diet sodas still have in men's minds. Well, Dr. Pepper 10 pointedly macho image is going to be advertised directly to the target market, with spots during college football games on ESPN, and the Facebook page for the product offers applications that actually can exclude women. This goes back to my favorite concept of mine, targeted relations. What Dr. Pepper is doing might be called marketing slash advertising, but since it is obvious that this approach was destined to generate controversy and hence free publicity, we are actually also in public relations territory, and that's my point. Dr. Pepper will benefit from the furor over excluding women and further underscore the street cred with their target market men. Fact is, for Dr. Pepper, successful public relations is defined by appealing to the widest possible audience and would translate to failed targeted relations and hence undermine the product's marketing. Luckily, they've turned their backs on public relations. This is a lot like the Ben & Jerry's controversial flavor of weeks back with sweaty balls. Sure, it might have upset the general public. But as I always like to say, who cares about the general public? Just as long as you're not getting your target market, your customers upset. So with that in mind, I say hats off to Dr. Pepper 10. And the courage, to really target their market. Great marketing job. And by the way, you know, I was a little uncomfortable and I don't really like. First of all, as I get older, I don't want to start throw bombs and be controversial. That's number one. And secondly, I really have a thing about excluding people. But when I what calmed me down about this campaign is that they did do focus groups with women, and that women who would be drinking this would not be offended. And for me, if that's the case, I got to put my personal feelings aside and say, John, you are the marketing doctor, and it is all about marketing. So there you have it. What I like now to talk about is the loser. And this is not easy for me because I really, really have a lot of respect for the person that I'm going to name as the loser, and her name is Oprah. All right. And I go off and name her each year as the winner of the year. She's wonderful, she's great, she's a great brand. I made a comment at the conference that I was on how much I admired her. And then what I do is I think. And then I say, gee, what's she doing here? And I talked a little bit about the Rosie O'Donnell situation, and I'm going to get into that in a second. But the problem is that Oprah's network is really not doing well. OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network. And does this smell of something like what I always scream about? And people sometimes roll their eyes when I tell them, and then they think about it and they say, you know, you're right. People buy brands, not companies. And the problem here is that people love Oprah. They don't like a network full of Oprah as Oprah-isms, because that's a little too, that's not really direct. And that's not really, it's not directly tied to Oprah in terms of, in Oprah's mind it might be. But in terms of her listeners or viewers, it's not. And once again, you can have the best ideas, the best dog food. But if the dog or the target market doesn't like the dog food or the product that you are, in fact, trying to promote, forget about it, as my father used to say. So, anyway, She enlisted, I think a brand that I always appreciated, Rosie O'Donnell, as one of the shows on her network. And the problem with Rosie, even though I'm a big fan of hers, is that she alienated a lot of her fan base, and she may be still a little too radioactive, maybe. And according to, and I haven't seen the show, and I apologize to you because I have to see it, watch it next week, the new show that Rosie did. I heard it was nothing new, and it was kind of a disappointment. But that's from somebody who's not really a fan, and I really should reserve judgment. But that's why I'm doing this, because there might be some issues there. So I'd like to get your feeling on this. If you're a Rosie fan, and whether or not you believe that Oprah should be a loser. 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. And after the break, I got we're going to have, of course, our Did You Know That?, which should be fun. We're going to talk about my upcoming event at St. Francis College. And we're going to talk about the science brand. And we're going to do that right after the break.
National news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa LaSera. A monkey and a wolf, the last two animals missing from a private animal park in eastern Ohio.
The total number of animals we were dealing with was approximately 56 animals on this farm. Those numbers included 48 of which are now deceased.
Sheriff Matt Lutz, who adds police had no choice but to shoot the animals. They're telling people who live in the area to stay indoors. Police say the farm's owner threw open the cages, setting lions and other animals free overnight, then killed himself. Police still don't know why he did it. The feds finding the source of the listeria outbreak that's killed 25 people and sickened 123.
That listeria-laced cantaloupe has been traced to a packaging plant in Colorado. The Food and Drug Administration saying corroded and hard-to-clean equipment at Jensen Farms is the most likely source.
Fox Radio's Jared Halpern, Fox News. We report, you decide.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Updated weather forecast for this afternoon. Periods of rain heavy at times for the afternoon. Breezy on the mild side, mid-60s. For tonight, it'll be cloudy with some rain for this evening. And a chance of showers overnight with some patchy fog developing by daybreak. And nighttime lows down near 60. Thursday's looking partly sunny. Might be a morning shower, but then partly sunny as the day wears on. Mid to upper 60s. Partly cloudy at night in the upper 40s. Friday features sunshine, lower 60s. Saturday mostly sunny. 55 to 60, mostly sunny near 60 Sunday. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
Raining in 61 degrees.
Amplify your voice.
Easy to work. Press talk button.
AM 1460, WVOX and WVIP HD2, New Rochelle.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
We're back. You're listening to Brand Talk here on WVOX 1460 on your AM dial. My name is Dr. John Tantillo, and we'd love to hear from you. 914-636-0110 or doc@brandtalkradio.com. We have a caller on the line. What's your name? What's your brand? Where are you from?
Hey, Morgan, doctor. It's Charlie from Long Island.
Hey, Charlie from Long Island. How are you doing?
Good.
What's up, kiddo?
Listen, I came across some interesting ideas this week that I thought were thought-provoking, and I wanted to share some of my thoughts about them with you.
Sounds great, and that's what we like everyone to do at 914-636-0110. This is great. What did you find there?
Well, they relate to brands, more specifically to your online identity or your online profile.
Not John Tantillo's online identity, but one's.
One.
The generic one.
Yes.
In terms of the cosmos. Yes, go ahead.
Well, the basic idea was that the current crop of social software products we use, like Facebook or now Google+, are geared toward creating one flat, single-dimensional portrait of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
They aggregate all of the information about us and present this unified profile to the public, to the world. But in the real world, we have different sides of ourselves that we present at different times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're parents, and we're workers, and we have friends we play poker with or go to the ball games with, and our personalities are multifaceted. And you know, we don't always show all sides of ourselves to everybody. But even if it's out there, people don't see all the sides about us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that I find this fascinating is that I used to think there was a generational divide or a generational gap in how comfortable people felt with putting all of their identities online, with effectively putting them in stone.
Right.
You know, I grew up in a world where we kind of morphed our resumes when we went for a job, morphed our personalities to fit that job. So, you know, if there's a difference between if a company's looking for a marketing person who's good with numbers or a numbers person who's good with marketing, you might fit both jobs, but you want to show yourself in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And today, if you know, you've got to use LinkedIn if you're looking for a job, you need to set your resume in stone and emphasize what you did or didn't do at any particular job. You can't change that resume like you could in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And younger people who grew up with this seem very comfortable with doing it. But older people don't.
Right.
And at first I thought it was more of a having grown up with it or not. But this article I was reading made me think more about it. And maybe there is a problem with the way Facebook constructs everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Facebook has just made this timeline.
Right.
Part of the site.
Right.
It's going to preserve even more of what we do. So somebody who grows up with Facebook and has a college life and an early career and starts putting that stuff online will find themselves 20 years from now with that part of their life and their personality chronicled, and they can't get away from it.
Right. Well, I first of all, I love this question. And I think, although I think it's poppycock, what they're proposing here, because all brands are going to appeal to different target markets, so that when you are Charles. The father, that's Charles the father. When you're Charles the husband, that's your Charles the husband. It doesn't mean that your brand is significantly different. It means that you're going to be emphasizing different what we call in marketing related product features. So when you're going on a consulting job, you're not going to wear your sweats, or you're not going to wear your shorts or your gym shorts or your workout up tie. You're going to wear your Brooks Brothers tie, your jacket or suit. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're unidimensional. And I would dare say that when you're branding yourself, you want to be this real person. So, I don't want to use myself as an example, but why shouldn't I? Because, when I go to a party, I generally don't wear a suit when I go to a party. What I'll wear is a jacket, tie, always a bow tie, because that's part of my brand. The hat will differ, and what I wear on television, which is my olive green Borsellino, could be either a blue Borsellino, it could be a cream-colored Borsellino felt hat. But the point I'm making is that as you go through these different target markets or these different situations, we reveal different things about our brand. I don't necessarily feel, and I think that in a Facebook situation, what you want to be very careful of is, I think I do it fairly well, and if people want to tell me differently, you can go to my Facebook page, John Tantillo, and put on my wall what exactly you thought about it. But I think I kind of put, a wide range of activities that I that I've been involved with. I'm never embarrassed, but a little bit. I just rolled my eyes and say, oh, my God. I had a friend of mine. I was tagged in a photo, and he says to me in his British accent, oh, you're such a player. And, I thought nothing of it, but that's what happens. And so what I guess I'm saying is that I think the article was great in that it's getting us to talk. And that's what this is about, brand talk, where branding gets personal. But anyway, and so it's really, really good. But I don't know. How do you feel about because you're always very you're very critical, not critical in a demeaning sense, but critical in a theoretical academic sense. What do you think of how I responded to this? Are you there?
Yeah. Actually, it's making me think of a broader question, which is how can a brand change? More about a personal brand.
Yes.
If you're one thing in your 20s and want to be a different thing in your
40s, wow. You're
how
good.
Do you step away from that, particularly today, if everything you were in your 20s is out there.
Right. I am such a different person at my age, which is my own, than I was in my 20s. Gee whiz. Yeah. And it's called the evolution of your brand. The important thing here is to accept your brand and to accept yourself and realize that, there are just certain things that you just don't like and that you don't want to do or you can't do. In a very early age, I loved baseball I couldn't play to save my life, but I loved it. And I remember I was 13 years old. I was 14 years old. I had just graduated grammar school, and I was playing for my church team, which was freshman year. And the ball came off the infield. I was playing first base. The ball came off the infield at a velocity that I had not ever seen, and I knew at that point that I was never going to be able to play baseball. It was there, but yet to come to that moment. And so I had to change that baseball was not going to be one of those things. Now, you got to understand that what I did is I used to keep score. I used to be an umpire. I mean, I love baseball. But it's those kinds of moments. And I mean, there are other moments when you realize that there are certain things that you're just not going to be able to do. And you have to accept that and find out what your brand is today. Big problem. What about the ball player who for 20 years has been playing ball? And this number of people have come to me with their ball player friends. They can't play ball anymore. What are they going to do? Now I think some of the major leagues, even professional basketball teams, have counseling for people. But, I mean, imagine that. Imagine making millions. And people say, well, you know, you got all those millions you should have saved. Yeah. Not necessarily true. How are you going to... Now you're going to, some people might get upset at me for using transition. How are you going to transition? And if you do it right, there are a friend of mine by the name of Jim Metzger who sponsors this show, talks about everything I learned in business. I've learned on the sports field. And I'm paraphrasing, of course, but the point I'm making is that because our brand matures, just like a packaged good brand matures. What happens when you're baking soda and no one bakes anymore? you better look at different uses, or otherwise you're out of business, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I see, and that's why I get all excited, because there are these lessons that we can, in fact, learn from the big boys and girls, the big brands, and why shouldn't we? And I mean, you know, people roll their eyes and they say, "Oh, Tantillo, you're crazy." I'm not. I'm a person. But yes, you are a brand as well, if you look at it that way. Not that you're sellable, but look at it that way, because by looking at it that way, you can help yourself. Am I helping you out here, or am I just babbling along it?
No, it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, I wonder about, you know, cases where, I mean, if you wanted to be an athlete and you found yourself couldn't play baseball, there's nothing negative about that that's going to influence what you're doing right now. But if you were a corporate lawyer, and you decided your real passion is rock and roll.
Wow.
You want to be in that world.
Sure.
But people go back and look at you as a suit. You know, how do you overcome that? Or if it was something more negative, like
you were
heavily involved in politics and, you know, for one side.
Right.
And then you wanted to, you know, get a job somewhere else. You know, you've got to kind of live with your old brand.
Yes.
Well, interesting question.
No. That's really great. I'm so glad you called. Great topic, and thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, if you want to chime in, weigh in, become part of the discussion here on Brand Talk, where branding gets personal, here on WVOX, 1460 AM. Give us a call, 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. Now, folks, it's time for the perennial crowd favorite, Dr. John Tantillo's Did You Know That? Did You Know That is where little-known facts are brought center stage for your delight, amazement, and dare I say, your continuing education. And now, Did You Know That?
This is Dr. John Tantillo asking, Did You Know That? We take this world filled with iPods and countless devices for granted. But it was the request of one man and the tireless imagination of a team that made this world possible. The year was 1978. A Japanese executive wondered if there was a way to listen to his beloved operas on the long trans-Pacific flights he frequently took. He turned to his top engineer, Nobutoshi Kahara, for a solution. What Nobutoshi delivered was groundbreaking, a lightweight cassette player that could produce extraordinary sound quality. The executive recognized that what had begun as a solution to a personal need would have universal appeal. But right off the bat, he had a big problem. People simply weren't used to wearing earphones and carrying their music around with them. The device risked becoming a flop. His team took to the streets, parks, and subways of Tokyo. They got people to try the device, and when they did, they bought. The product was its own best advertisement. Within a year, the player was flying off the shelves around the world. The company was Sony. The player, the legendary Walkman. One of the best-selling audio devices of all time, and the one that kicked off all those gadgets that we now make part of our lives. And now you can say, yes, I know that. And now a word from our sponsor, the Whitmore Group, where a relationship is a partnership. I've known James Metzger, the Whitmore Group CEO, for years. I'm a client and a friend, and I have seen how he fights for his clients and strives to meet their genuine insurance needs. Folks, it's bad to pay for insurance you don't need, but it's worse to think you're protected and then find out you're not. You want the right kind of professionals having your back. The Whitmore Group has your back. It's where a relationship is a partnership. Their number, 516-746-4141, 516-746-4141, or visit them on the web at whitmoregroup.com and tell them Dr. Tantillo sent you.
We're back. You're listening to Brand Talk on WVOX Radio, 1460 AM. My name is Dr. John Tantillo, and we love to hear from you. Give us a call at 914-636-0110 or doc@brandtalkradio.com. And we'll talk about your brand, whether or not it's personal, business, or career-oriented. We'd love to hear from you. And we were just talking with a listener about brand and whether or not what happens when we are, in fact, maturing. How do we change? How do we transition? And we had a great discussion. So if you'd like to get into the conversation, please give us a call, 914-636-0110, or email us at doc@brandtalkradio.com. By the way, this Did You Know That is really one of my favorites, and the question that it addresses is, where does a successful invention come from? Is it only a big idea? No, it has many different things coming together, and the big idea is only one part. So that if you have what you think is a great idea, and I've had a lot of former students of mine come up with ideas that were just god-awful, and even went through the patent process, but it was never going to go anywhere. And, you know, how do you tell them? But, of course, I did it in the most diplomatic way, but... That's what happens sometimes. But the Sony story tells us something else. It tells us about inventions that can catch on. And just like the Gillette story, a need is at the bottom of it. And if it doesn't satisfy a need, well, then we're just wasting time. And marketing has to be at the center of the invention, as was the Walkman. And that what you want to do is refine the concepts until they mesh with what it is that people want. And with the Sony Walkman, we started with one man's need. It was the head of the company, his love of the opera, and wanting to listen to these to his operas on long flights. But the thing, about most needs is that they are often universal. And if you find a way to address the personal need, you will then find that there's a there's demand out there. So anyway. What also got me excited about this is that the inventor hated the brand name Walkman. He hated it. However, when they did the research and they found out that people liked it, wow, he accepted it. And that takes a big man or a big woman when you see that you can in fact be incorrect in some of your perceptions or on the way it can be marketed. And there you go. You listen and you put your ego aside for the brand's benefit. And so that's something wonderful. And another item that gets me excited, and you know, I've talked about this once before, but you know, as I always say, it takes something like 10 or 15 times before an ad message sinks in. It's the teacher in me coming out. So I think this might have been only the second time I said this. But, folks, there's nothing like sampling. People love, you know, they love to get something for free. And they like to experience it. And I remember, you know, in the old neighborhood, it was 1967. It was a hot summer's night. And Joe and John had their, in Ridgewood, Queens, open up their pizza parlor. And there was a line around the block to get free pieces of pizza. And to this day, in Ridgewood, on Myrtle Avenue, and I think it is Central, no, it's not, it's Center Street? I don't know what it is. It's one block off Forest Avenue, where I grew up. And I'm not getting any payola here, folks. I'm just letting you know that pizzeria is still there, and the owners have retired and passed it along to their kids. And it's just you know, they didn't read any marketing textbooks, but they knew something about instinctively about marketing, and there you have it. So anyway, and that's what he did. That's what they did over at Sony. They actually got people to experience this Walkman, and the rest is history. So anyway, you're listening here on WVOX, 1460 AM on your dial. Love to hear from you, 914-636-0110. Or give us a email at doc@brandtalkradio.com. That's doc@brandtalkradio.com. Well, tomorrow I am giving a little, what would I say, a little presentation, a little speech to my alma mater, St. Francis College in Brooklyn, New York. And where I attended from 1971 to 1970, actually it was 72, 71 to through 73. I'm sorry, I'm having a senior moment here, where I studied psychology. And I just, it will bring back a lot of great memories. And it's strange as it may seem, I am addressing, of course, not the psychology club, but I'm addressing the economic society. So anyway, I'm going to be doing that tomorrow. So if you if you're in Brooklyn, in Brooklyn Heights, where I lived for 2 years of my life, best years of my life, had a great time. It was a great school. Come on down. But I what I like to reminisce about is the seeds of my brand, and it was there that I knew that I wanted to study psychology. And it was there that I knew I was going to get my PhD. And that was, and I might have mentioned this man's name before, but I'll say it again, Dr. Louis Primavera, who was a, who is over, I think, with, I'm forgetting the name of the place that he's at now, where he's the dean. But the important thing here is that's where I learned how to be a scientist. And I was talking to a friend, my friend Keith, before I went on the show, when I said I was going to talk a little bit about the science brand and how I feel today scientists are not really scientists. They're they've forgotten their brand. And that, what does that mean? It means that to be a scientist, you have to be skeptical. And there's the basis of all science is committing a type one error, which is saying that something exists when in fact it really doesn't exist. And I'm not going to get into any political discussions here, but you know, my friend Keith very astutely said, "Well, you know why they're doing that?" And I said, "No, why?" He says, "It's all about money. It's all about marketing." I said, "You got to be kidding." Yeah, you got to. He says, you have to understand that they're all looking, or the money has dried up. NSF money has, for all intents and purposes, is non-existent. And so what they got to do is they got to do that. They got to look for money. And folks, I can't believe that another show has ended. And we'll hope to see you next week. And we're here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 on WVOX. And remember, keep your brand in mind. See you next week.